Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. And Fred and I were just talking about effort versus outcome.
Are you talking about weightlifting today? Is that you got a workout coming up?
Yes, but that's what I'm talking about. I was talking to a friend of mine, and obviously with COVID-19, we've had to change our workplace, pattern of life. A lot of people are working from home, and I think for many years there was a very conservative bias against, flexible workplaces. If they're not here in my office, how do I know they're working hard? Things like that.
Mm. Well, that's a personal problem for those people. That's my opinion, but
true. But it was prevalent, I would argue.
I agree.
When COVID-19 came along, one of the many things it did was demonstrate to the world that is not the default position. Human beings tend to want to do well as a rule, and if they work from home, you'd be surprised that they might be able to achieve. But working from home is at the be all and end all, of course, is interpersonal relationships and things like that that come into play, but that's the topic for another podcast. But my friend was talking to me about how it really disrupted the culture of his workplace in a really positive way, because he had guys and girls who would turn up to work, maybe the first one in there, the last one to leave. But when he thought about it in hindsight, they really weren't as called high flyers, but they were there the whole time. And so it was hard for anyone to sort of criticize what they were bringing to the organization, because they were first one there, last one to leave. But when COVID-19 came along, a lot of engineers, in some cases, were able to get their work done within the first 2 hours of that day. And mm-hmm. It was brilliant. It was fantastic. It was on time. They didn't need to prove anything to anyone. And once they got their work done, they were able to go have a swim or go to the beach or go for a run or what have you.
Right.
Whereas the people who were there, when they were working back in the office, were there first thing in the morning and left last thing at night, they weren't providing good work at all. And for him, it just highlighted the fact that when you are in an office environment, effort is very visible. You can see people there. You can see people, wandering around, speaking to people, gathering information, working on spreadsheets. But it can sometimes cover up outcomes. You can see someone is working very, very hard, but are they working on the right thing? Are they working on their favorite thing? Are they working on something which intrigues them as opposed to generates value within your organization? And he quickly learned that actually what was happening was there's this really powerful focus on outcomes more so than effort. And it was an overall net positive, at least in his experience.
Oh, yeah. No, and the parallel for me is that in the reliability maturity matrix, there's the level 3 group. I forget what their name is, but they do everything. They have a checklist of 87 different activities mm-hmm. that they do for every program, and they're running around like crazy with lots and lots of effort. And they get marginal results or meaningless results on 85 of those 87 activities because they just don't have time to actually select the right ones to do and or get the most out of what they do. For example, one organization decided they were going to run HALT on every prototype and every program, but their facilities only allowed them to spend 2 hours per program's prototype. So they put it in there and do a couple temperature changes and vibrate a little bit, and then they'd run out of time and they'd find nothing. Well, that's mm-hmm. silly. That's just worthless.
Yeah.
And they were wondering why their reliability wasn't going up. We're doing all this stuff. That's not doing reliability. That's just running around doing a lot of stuff. It's not You got to do the useful stuff. And I think focusing on outcomes is, if I'm going to go do HALT, it's because I need to know what's going to fail. I don't know. I need to discover the weaknesses, and let's go learn something. And if you're already, if you don't need to know that, or you're in a state where you already have a long list of things to work on, well, skip the HALT. It's not going to generate useful stuff for you, so skip it. Just adding to the list is effort. Adding to what you need to know is focusing on the outcomes. Yeah, maybe we should make reliability guys work from home more often or something.
HALT testing, is, you know, just
Give it to your daughter. That's a version of HALT test.
put peanut butter on it and give it to a dog. That's
that's another one. Yeah. That one might come in handy for that dumpster project you got going on.
That's true.
Get some, you know, raccoons. Raccoons would be in there. That'd be a stress that's not common.
Well, my experience, and I'd be interested to see if you concur or could add to my list, but I think there's two reasons we have this reliability effort phenomenon. And by that I mean organizations who focus on doing reliability stuff but don't get the outcomes. And for me, the first reason is that they really don't want to do reliability properly. So one way of being able to convince themselves and people around them that, no, we do take reliability seriously, without them actually stopping to think about what really matters, is having this list of stuff they do and say, hey, look, we do all this stuff, so we're taking it seriously.
Now, well, I don't think that's the thought process. I don't think you're being fair there. I think there's a step that's just missing from their thinking it through. They somehow have gotten the idea that if I have a chamber and we do a bunch of testing, or we do an FMEA and then we do this, we do that, we do all these things, we, you know, expect now we're doing reliability. I think that's where the breakdown of logic is, well, those are activities that may or may not be part of your reliability, actually help you with your reliability. But it's easy to say, oh, well, other organizations that do this, and the textbooks all talk about FMEA and HALT and modeling and stuff like that, so we'll do all that stuff, and therefore we must be good. Well, no, there's a missing step there. Which is the outcome part is missing, and it's thinking through it. And it's not the same as saying, well, if I have two lines, I double my productivity. Not exactly, guys. You know, not always. That logic doesn't carry through to thinking parts of your business.
I don't know if I can agree with you on that one, mainly because I know which organizations you're talking about. But for those of us who have worked in the defense and defense industry sphere, I've seen firsthand where everyone wants to desperately rush to complete the next gate. And it's, well, what things can we say we've done about reliability for us to be able to say we've done something about reliability?
Right. But that's a checklist mentality. That's not reliability in my mind.
That's my point, is that these people in this case, they're not really focused on, they don't want to do reliability because it gets in the way of
meeting the
next milestone.
Yeah. I have run into a few people like that, but I contend that it's more often that they confuse doing activities as accomplishing the goal.
Right, but that's still the outcome. Right. I mean,
yeah.
So I think, so for at least for my bucket, the first one is where they don't really want to do it. They prioritize other stuff. Reliability is, if they like the idea of it, but they really want to be meet that, you know, design review gate or that particular milestone faster than anybody else has ever done it before. And the second one is when they're confused. The second scenario is when they're confused about what to do. They don't really know what steps they need to undertake to improve reliability. They want to improve reliability. They just don't know what they need to do.
Yeah.
And so they say, well, let's do everything. That's my second.
Yeah, there's that. I think there's a third group is where, well, we got burned in the last program because we didn't check high temperature. So let's check high temperature every time going forward. Or, you know, and it's just add on more gates or hurdles to the program and just keep adding stuff. And so eventually we'll stamp out all the things that cause problems.
Yeah, and that becomes a very reactive, you know, everything that has gone wrong, will make sure it never happens again. And philosophically, it sounds perfectly valid. Of course, if we know this has happened in the past, we'll do a test or do something to make sure it never happens again. But
then you end up with a test cycle, even for software that's going to take you a week to run, and it's verifying that all of the bugs you fixed are still fixed, as opposed right. to, well, what's not working that should.
Right.
Which is a different view of it.
It sets up a very reactive culture where people are, you know, it has to have failed before we take it seriously.
Yeah. And I've seen a few of those. One of them, actually, it was a contract. They wanted us to help them figure out how to reduce the amount of effort they put into their, because it was taking them 3 months to run the gauntlet once they finalized the design. And half of the tests were things that had never failed since they implemented it. Never mm-hmm. gave them any information whatsoever. And I said, well, what is this test for? Well, back in 68, Bill thought it would be a good idea if we twirled it over the lamp, over the gas lamp, and made sure that it wasn't going to fail if it did that. And I'm like, okay, what's that got to do with anything? You know, why are you right. doing this? And I'm like, oh, man, we never thought about it.
It's an LED lamp now, not a gas lamp.
That's right. And we've been, you know, but we've always done it. And how are we going to compare to our past performance if we don't repeat all the tests that we did before? When have you ever compared your test output to last time in any meaningful way? And you're like, all right, stop it. Just stop it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talk about the vital few all the time. What are the vital few? And yes, the vital few 10 years ago, not today's vital few.
That's right. And I find that is a very common step, is that I don't have time. It is not even consciously said. It's just I'm busy. I got a lot of stuff and I got to create a plan. Well, the last program went pretty well, so let me use that plan for this one. That plan was a new platform with new technology. This plan is a cost reduction on a legacy product, completely different technology. Mm-hmm. It's like, And I usually just sit back and go, do you see anything wrong with doing that? And he goes, no, I got a plan now. I'm ready to go. I check that box off and we have an action. We can do all these things. And now it's got to set up the schedule and get enough protos. And they get focused on implementing, doing the activity, the effort part, as opposed to saying, who needs this result to make a decision?
Right. I think what you're describing there goes into, again, my first category of organizations where reliability is not the priority. Right. It is being able to say we have a plan. That's the priority. Mm-hmm. The quickest way to have a plan is to do a word search in last year's plan, take out 2020, replace it with 2021. You have a plan. It's the quickest way of having a plan. With those sort of big organizations which really pervert the spirit of systems engineering, it's just how quickly can we get to the next milestone? What's anything that gets in our way has to be minimized. So we don't want to spend a lot of time thinking about reliability, even though if they do, they'll probably actually accelerate their time frame anyway.
Recently we were talking about FMEA. And it was in your podcast, I think, the 10 reasons to do FMEA. And, you know, or one of the fallacies, I don't remember exactly how I phrased it, but it was something like, I heard it from a client the other day. So we're not sure we want to do FMEA. That'll slow the process down.
Yeah.
Like, nope, you need to talk to Chris.
So, well, it's people always say you can have things high quality, fast, or cheap. You get to choose two of those. And that's just, this is not true. That I'd say that's true for the first iteration of design. If you only have one shot at designing something, and that's it, whatever you come up with, your first blueprint, that's it. All right, fast, cheap, or high quality. Okay, I'm with you. But design's an ongoing evolutionary process. Your first concept is going to bear precious little resemblance to your final manufacturing prototype. It's all about where you find those problems. And if you can find those problems before you do your first design, you have saved, you know, thousands, perhaps millions of dollars just by, and we talked about Motorola, the push-to-talk radio, sorry, the two-way radio, the push-to-talk mm-hmm. button. They were able to incorporate, for example, little ramps at each side of their push-to-talk button. And they used a Famia to do that. And by having those little ramps, it made it that much easier for the customer to use that button. And it cost, it had essentially had a zero net cost because it was just a characteristic.
And it was incorporated into the requirement before the requirement, before it was drawn, before you had a mold cut. Now, if you, for example, if you, and you've heard that concept of it's every phase is caught, a failure costs 10 times as much or something like that. And if you wait till the customer's complaining about it, it's orders of magnitude more expensive to retrofit or recall or redesign something. Whereas if you do an FMEA, it takes you an afternoon. And now you've got like 10 or 12 ideas that will significantly improve your product. And you can do it for near nothing other than spending an afternoon talking with your friends about how things could fail.
Well, I think we need to caution that, you know, FMEAs can take an afternoon, but getting your organization up to speed to do FMEAs well, it takes a little bit of time, training and process and all that sort of stuff. But, take your point. Once your organization is fluent in FMEAs, let's say that, and you have a good FMEA facilitator, it could be an afternoon worth of effort that saves millions of dollars and years of delays later on. Because if you're smart enough to be able to design something that can work, you almost certainly know how it's going to likely fail as well.
Yep. But it's also effort. I've seen FMEAs, like other activities, like product testing, where it's a checklist item. And they hand it off to, you know, Jesus over in the corner and say, hey, can you fill out this FMEA form for us? And or better, they outsource it to some company on the other side of the country, and they send you a 75-page document that nobody reads. Yeah,
it's infuriating.
Yeah. But they can point to it and saying, yep, we did an FMEA. There it is. It takes up 3 feet on my bookshelf. You know, we did it.
Those are my favorites where, you know, I've worked with an organization, transportation organization. A contractor is building something for them, and that contractor is required to do a FMEA or FMEA, and that contractor outsources it to a professional FMEA FMEA. generator. All right. What are we trying to achieve? A lot of money's changing hands, a lot of effort's going into creating that 3 feet of documents you're referring to. But what's the outcome? Design change was implemented as a result of that?
Well, I think the basic idea here, this idea of effort versus outcomes, we're kind of bashing effort. Now, it does take effort to do an FMEA well, right? It does take effort. It's not like we're saying don't put effort into getting things done. No, you got to do the right things. But a way to sort that out is focus on the outcomes. Hey, we need to prioritize what we need to focus on to get this design right. Oh, FMEA might be a good option. Let's go do that well. And as opposed to, FMEAs, I read about that in a book the other day. It's one of those things everybody has to do. Let's just do one. Oh, I don't have time. Let's outsource it. Okay, we're done. Good. We can point to that and saying, hey, we did an FMEA. I was like, no. And I think it's part of that cultural thing that's like, come on, guys. What are you trying to accomplish here?
Or you say, look, we need to do a FMEA or FMEA. Do we have time? Can we afford more than one person to do it? No. So you just go over there in the corner. You are most likely the junior engineer who is the boss's least favorite human being on that day, and you go and fill in a spreadsheet, and we got a FMEA done.
Yeah.
Technically.
And that's where I draw the line. I say, no, that's not what that is. If you do a halt and nobody uses the results, nobody even looks at it, or if you run an accelerated life test, but it takes 6 months longer to get results than when you have to decide when it's, ship or no ship, those are pointless. Those are less than useful. And
yeah, I agree with that.
And so it's, there's a lot of effort in those kind of things. But effort doesn't always translate to meaningful outcomes. And I think not losing sight of that. And I often go after people with, here's a list of 15 international standards that we're going to run. Every one of them takes 3 samples and it does this and that and the other thing. And I says, okay, do these set of stress conditions relate to anything you're interested in learning about or need to know? You know, is there any rationale whatsoever in that the French set up an environmental standard for the Mediterranean climate that applies to your Arctic expedition product? Yeah. Or why are you using a watch moisture resistance standard for your, you know, your camera? What is it you're trying to learn? You know, if somebody drops the camera in the water, will it still work? Well, that's closer to what I think is focusing on the outcomes, as opposed to having a long list of official looking test results on your data sheet.
Yeah. And
I'm going into rant mode here. If you can't.
Yeah. but to echo your point, if you focus on outcomes, then of course effort's required. If you just focus on effort, then you can get effort from anywhere you want. You can expend effort in any manner you want. You can do absolutely everything you do can be labeled as effort. But if it's not tied to outcomes, then you are prioritizing just the act of doing something over achieving something. And I think going back to my friend who just he's pleasantly surprised when people started working from home, just how quickly or how obvious the talent in the workforce became. And perhaps perhaps if we examine our everyday walk of life or things that we do every single day or people around us or organizations we're part of, if we look at them with a slightly more critical eye, perhaps we might be expending a lot more effort than we need to. If we just take that effort and focus it in the outcomes or outputs we want to achieve, we might be surprised at how much time and money we can save.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And definitely. It's not just reliability. There's lots and lots of areas of the world that this applies. So what I'm thinking is that we're going to ask our listeners for a little bit of effort because we have a desirable outcome we'd like. We'd like to get you to be part of the show. And so we've set up a new feature on the ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And now there's a little widget there that allows you to record a voicemail to us. So just push the button and use your system microphone, whether you're on a phone or on a tablet or on a computer. All of us now seem to have microphones hooked up to our machines. And so you can leave us a voice message and you can leave a comment or a question. And if you've got something that's related to this, you know, effort versus outcome in conversation and ways to focus on what's appropriate or some of the silly effort scenarios you've seen, those are all would make good contributions to the ongoing discussion. So we'd like to hear from you, literally hear from you, and we'll respond as quick as we can. But we'll also probably build a podcast episode around it and include your voice clip on the show. And that I think that would be a great way for you to actually join the conversation. That reminds me, the first podcast where we had this available and talked about it is gone out. So now I'm going to have to go check to see where or how I get notified if I have a voice message. So we'll see if we've got anything already.
and those voice messages, I'm hoping they're going to really introduce a really personal element. It's always good to really focus, remember that it's a human being at the other end of these comments, because we take the comments seriously, but just again, just that voice might give it a very personal touch, which might give that context that's very important when trying to discuss those issues in podcasts like this.
Yeah. No, my real desired outcome is that, and it's given the premise of the show, it's, you know, friends talking to friends about reliability topics. But the idea would be is that, if we could create a segment that has, you know, we'll play a question from one of these inputs, or if we have multiple questions, that could become a segment of the show. And all right, let's do listener questions. And we often use them as a spark for the entire episode. We can continue to do that, but sometimes we get, you know, maybe a quick and easy answer or an interesting comment that we want to include. So lots of opportunities, but first we need to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Chris, for the idea here, this effort versus outcome. It's, yeah, as you can tell, it, I can get into rant mode on that one.
That's right. It's working smarter, not harder.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Time to go do some editing. We'll talk to you soon, Chris.
Cheers, Fred.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.